League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show with me, Tim Fuel, back with another week's look at the world of non-league football. The pro game, as they like to be called, have just 91 clubs. We have all that plus another 1,000. So who is more important to the past, the present, and the future of football? Well, I'll leave you to decide that one. On my own this week with Dave Anderson, otherwise busy. Not much going on in the world of non-league, actually. It's normally a downtime anyway. Lots of pictures of clubs getting their pitch reseeded, various pitch repair works underway, lots of maintenance going on as well, social distancing, of course, as well, up and down the country. Obviously, a quiet time normally in the build-up to pre-season. We still don't know when that real pre-season's going to take place on what the future holds, but hopefully we can find out in the coming weeks. News this week, though, that somebody clearly listens to this podcast as we've been nominated in the Football Content Awards. But Best in Non-League has a few categories this year, including one to vote for us in, which is the Best in Non-League podcast. Votes close Thursday the 18th of June at midnight, I believe, so make sure you get your vote in and across over at www.footballcontentawards.com. Cast your vote for the Non-League Football Show there in the Best in Non-League Podcast category. Let's get things underway then. A slightly shorter show this week due to the absence of Mr. Anderson, really, but let's hopefully give you something to listen to and something to enjoy about the world of non-league. Okay, the current situation with COVID-19 is forcing all of us, including non-league, into new ways of doing things and new ways of thinking. Last week, we spoke to a manager who's made himself unemployed during the current situation. A couple of weeks before, we spoke to a manager who's got himself a new job in lockdown. And this week, we go one better. We speak to a man who has become a manager at a National League club, not only from his home and expertise abroad, he hasn't even applied for the job. To tell us more, it's a very warm welcome to the Non-League Football Show. New manager at Ebbsfleet United, Dennis, is it Kutrip?
Yeah, Kutrip is okay, yeah.
Thank you. It's always a difficult one when we're dealing with language barriers, and I guess that's going to be something you're going to get used to. You're probably lucky that we haven't got Dave Anderson, my co-presenter, with me with his Northern Irish accent. So hopefully you can understand my West London drawl. But first up, a big welcome to the world of non-league football. I guess the big question that most people are going to want to ask, what do you know about the non-league game here in England and the National League in particular?
Yes, before Damien calls me, I don't know anything about the non-league football, but now it's a few weeks ago, and to this moment, I can say I know a lot of more things about football because I'm happy with scouting systems, and I can look much games. I don't know, but 30 or 40 games I watched in the last week.
Well, that says a lot about you as a manager, I think, that you've watched so many National League games already. And I mentioned at the start, and you mentioned Damien there, this wasn't a job you applied for. New CEO Damien Irvin had said that you were identified for the role. So how did you first come to know that the club were interested in you?
I get a mail from Damien and he asked me if I can imagine to come to England. We talked a lot of time and look, each other. What is the gut feeling? What is the work ethic? What is the situation actually in the club? Everything was fine for me, and it's similar to what I imagine for football. I want to work hard. I want to have success. It's similar to Damien. He works really hard for being successful, and I will do the same. And so I think it's a very, very nice chance to build a new team with Epsley. Not only a squad, I think the whole team, includes the fans, includes the team behind the squad and everything else.
Let's have a chat about your background, because there's probably many in non-league that certainly weren't aware of your work, shall we say, prior to the appointment. You were top with TB Berlin in the fifth tier of German football when the season was halted. And I think you've finished runners-up the year before and cup final. So you had a great time there in just the short spell that you were there. You're only 40. You started out in management in the seventh tier of German football just 6 years ago. And since your appointment, I've been speaking to people that I know across Europe that about you. And you are a name that people do know. People in footballing circles are aware of you. And it does seem that your coaching style has attracted attention. Was coaching in England, was that ever on your roadmap, on your plan of places to go?
No, it was not really on my roadmap, but for me it's very important to have imagination for things, to have success not for a city or for one club. It's important for the people behind the club and working with clubs and what are their plans. And I talked to Damien and to the doctor, and I realized very fast that the similar opinion to being successful, to being weird of things that don't are good enough. And so for me, it's very important to have imagination for a few things. When I have a new option to work with football.
Now, I know, having spoken to many of those people, many people have better knowledge of football and better knowledge of yourself than myself. I've got lots of praise for your willingness to change tactics as required when you're going into games. People have suggested that you always have a fairly mean defence, but a fairly attack-minded outlook as well. But your formation certainly are something that you've always been flexible upon. I guess to me that says you like to push yourself out of your comfort zone, and coming to the National League, as you say, having not seen too much of the national game at non-league level, it appears to be in the same vein. Is that one of the reasons you took the job, because it was beyond your normal comfort zone?
Yes, of course, it's very comfortable to stay in Germany, in my homeland, and with my own language. But I love to have big challenges. You explain it very well. For me, my love and my very big point is to work on details. Of course, in one game you can change your system. You can look what the opponent have to do or wants to do. You can do your own things. There's every manager have his own character and his own plan. But for me, it's very important that I can see what our opponent will do. And so when I have a good team and we can work with the team the whole day, we can make them as good as we want. It's only too hard to work hard. That's the point. Then every player can be able to realize successful gaming, because all other things are on my role. To give them much options to play a good game.
Yeah, so I've mentioned about how it's been received here, and it looks like the Ebbsfleet fans are going to get behind you as soon as we can get this season, well, football back underway. How have people reacted in Germany to you moving to an English club?
Yeah, they're very excited too. They wish me the best things. They hope that I can be successful as well. And of course, a few players come to me and ask if they come with me, because they know when I take my decision, then I'm 100% standing for my decision, and I will everything do that it would be successful. So, of course, I have players, they are very trustful to me. And they asked me if they can get on my way. So I get nice wishes all over the country, and they are all very excited, like me.
And obviously, lots of mention of other German managers that have been successful in England, like Jurgen Klopp and Daniel Farke. Now I know Farke began his managerial career in the sixth tier, I think, of German football. Similar to you, and from my understanding, the fifth tier and below, that's almost like your non-league in Germany. So a similar sort of thing that you're moving to here in the National League. You've mentioned some of the players there. Is there a lot of talent that you think could, you know, ply their trade, they could move to England to play in non-league levels, and maybe a reciprocal other English players going over to the German league as well?
Yes, there are, of course, there are talented players too, but that's not the reason why I'm here. I'm not here to come to Ebbsfleet to bring all German players to Ebbsfleet. I think there are enough good players, and there are a lot of talent. I told you, I saw 30 or 40 games until now, and I have a little bit more time because of the pandemic, so I will see enough games. Yeah, at the moment I can say there are good players in the league. In the non-league, I saw some games in the first league, in the second league. I saw games from the National League South and National League North. I think it's not, I'm not for 100% knowing the league. I don't want to talk about that, but I get a little impression, and for this impression I can say I don't need to take much players from Germany with me, because there are enough players with good characters on the pitch, and with much talent and enough ability to be successful and to work hard to be successful.
Yeah, and you've got Steve Lovell there as the director of football. You mentioned the doctor. You've mentioned Damien. Is Steve someone that you've had conversations with, and you're work alongside, because he's well known in the non-league game and certainly knows his Kent football very, very well?
Of course, yeah. I'm very thankful that I can work with him. We talked also not so often like with Damien, of course, but it will change the next weeks. The first step was to talk with Damien, and the next steps are to talk with Steve. In the last days, we talk much times, and I'm very thankful for him, because you said it, he is a very well known old manager himself, and I can learn from him about this non-league football, about the League Two, about Gillingham, about much other things. And I really appreciate to work with him.
Yeah, and I'm guessing, like any other new potential employee, you've probably Googled the club and got some background, and probably seen there's been many twists and turns in recent years and months of the football club. But there are new people there, and there's a new vigour there. That have you been able to get reassurances from everybody that the future is going to be a lot more stable at Ebbsfleet United?
Yes, I talked to many people, and I get a good gut feeling. I said it to the beginning. I think, especially in football, it's very important to have a good gut feeling in everything you do. during the game on the pitch, preparing the season, preparing contracts, talking with the fans, everything. I think the most important thing is to have a good gut feeling with everything you do. And I have to say that my gut feeling from the first day until now is a very good one, and I can't wait to start.
Well, waiting to start, that could be your biggest problem, I guess. Timing is, it can't be helped, can it? But the season in the National League effectively still unfinished from last term. So you take on a club who are technically in the relegation zone with three games to play. Now, there's many what-ifs and various non-football interventions that are likely to or maybe change that. But you're a new manager in a new country, new to the league, in a relegation battle, without proper access to your players. Where do you start planning your first steps as manager of Ebbsfleet United?
Yeah, it's not so complicated for me, because it's everything new. And when everything is new, it's not so complicated as when you stay in the league, you stay in a special team or something like this. When you start new, it's not really important if you start in the National League or in the National League South. Of course, I want when I can wish me something, I have a wish that I can start in the National League, of course. But we start completely new for me. It's a completely new start. And so that's not the important thing. I think the first steps we made. So we have to wait, of course. That's the biggest weakness I have, that we don't know when we can start and where we will start. But at the moment, I think we can go enough steps to plan the next situations. We have to talk with our actual squad, with whom we want to work, or who's able to work with us, who wants to work with us, and everything else. And so we can take step by step. And I have no fear about it, because that's no decision I can take or I can make. So I don't think about that, because it's too much energy to think about things I cannot decide.
Yeah, there's plenty of energy you're gonna need over the coming few months and coming season, for sure. By the wonders of the internet, we're able to talk face to face virtually via Zoom here. I guess, are you going to be doing that with each and every one of your players at the moment, just to try and understand where they are and where they want to head? Is that an important part of your role as a coach?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I think that's a very important role, that we can look after the not only on the pitch. We can try to learn about character. We can try about learning what their thoughts about football and what they want to do, not what they are able to do once a week or once a month. We have to look behind them, and we have to look who has really ability to work hard and who wants to be successful. Because in Germany, it's the same. I talk to much players in my life, and everybody tell you we are the greatest and we are the best, and we win games and no problem. But you have to decide if there is a good character, if he is able to work in a team, who can decide everything, not only on the pitch. So the first thing I do is, who has the ability to be successful with us on the pitch. And the second step will be that we talk to the players. When I know them, I think we can create a good squad for the new season. It's not important if it's in the National League or in the National League South, because I think it's a good journey for us and for the players, and I'm sure that in a few months a lot of players want to go with us this journey.
Yeah, and quite often we talk about new managers coming in. They tend to bring their old coaching staff with them. What's your plans? Are you going to bring with you people from Germany, or are you going to use an assistant manager or assistant coaches that are in England already?
We are not decided yet. I told you we have to make a few important decisions. They are done, and now we can take the next steps. For me, the next step is to talk to the squad we want to play with, or we want to work with from the actually one, and then we can look if I take another guy from Germany, or if I take a good assistant from England. I have no no big plans, because I know a few people who want to come with me. It's no problem, and we have a good one to Epsfleet who will come. I know him. We will talk about him the next days. It's a good transfer in the trainer team too. I'm very excited for him, and So we build our staff from step to step, and I'm sure I told you that we will have a good staff, and we will have a good squad, good fans, good stadium, good pitch. Everything is nice. Everything is prepared, so we can work hard. And I hope that our waiting will not be so long.
Well, that's it. It's that waiting game, isn't it? And I think you're back in Germany at the moment as we speak, and we've got the government here imposing a 14-day quarantine for those coming back to England. So that's another hurdle, isn't it, into you trying to become a manager of a club in a different country at the moment?
It's no problem. I said it because I don't take care about things I can't decide, and what I have to do now, I can complain, can think about things, but this energy is not the right one. I need the energy to look games on Y-Scout, to be prepared, to talk to players, and we have the wonderful situation all over the world that we can talk about internet, and that we have Zoom and everything else, so that's no problem to work at this moment with important things.
And I think it's probably that attitude that has given you the success that you've had already in your short managerial career, and probably one of the reasons, or the biggest reason, that Epsfleet United have chosen you as their manager. Dennis, thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. We wish you well in the role, and we hopefully will get to speak to you again in the not too distant future and talk about some football underway. Best of luck.
Yeah, thank you too. I hope the same, and when everything goes right, I think we can talk much time together. Thank you.
Right, so let's head on over to virtual non-league paper towers for our weekly roundup. And it's a welcome back to the Non-League Football Show with editor-at-large, Mr. Matthew Badcock. Welcome back, Matt.
Thanks, Tim. How are you?
I'm good. I'm a little bit locked down. I don't know, jaded, maybe. I don't know. The weather's not helping now, because it doesn't look as good outside the window when you're standing here or typing away, doing various bits and pieces. The sunshine certainly helps the mood. And we've had another one of those weeks in non-league, haven't we, where we just sort of slowly nudge along. My wife was complaining to me the other day when I was watching a documentary about Isambard Brunel, Kingdom Brunel, and about how they developed the tunnelling machine, and they used to go inches and inches away at a time and then just start again. And I feel that's the way non-league's heading. We've had news that the National League are going to follow what the EFL do. The EFL appear to be gradually getting towards a restart, maybe, but still not a full decision. And I just sense that non-league's in a state of limbo, being controlled by everybody else's decisions, but I'm not entirely sure that those people that are making the decisions know what decisions they're going to be making.
Yeah, I agree. I just think it's frustrating, isn't it? But just, yeah, there's just no, there's more questions than there will ever be answers at the moment. It's just how long are we going to have to wait to get some of these answers? I mean, just kind of feel in the office, we've kind of been having the same conversations almost every week, and you know, what could happen, what might happen, this, that, and you can come up with all sorts of different theories and all sorts of things about the finishing, as you said, the National League season, waiting for the EFL votes, then that's pushed back another 24 hours, and then the government put out another bit of advice, and then that seems to change it, and it's just been a sort of a completely sort of strange period. And as you say, I just feel like generally the majority of non-league is kind of in a bit of limbo, because there's just so many things that can't be answered by football at the moment because of everything else that's going on. It's very bizarre, and we're sort of normally at this time of year, aren't we? We're sort of still digesting the season that's happened, and then enjoying a little break. And I think at the moment we're all kind of desperate to have some football back to watch and get out and see it. But it's just that real question of actually how long is that going to be, and we'll probably be quite a bit realistic about it.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because normally at this time of year we are. It's all about the controversy.
I don't remember what time of year it is, to be honest.
I am still suffering from that. My brain still thinks it's March, that the sunshine has been helping, that it's summer. But we normally get to this stage. We're hitting AGM season, so it's a proper. There's various clubs that are in dire straits, or there's restructuring decisions that are going to upset people. There's going to be people threatening court cases. We've got a little bit of that at the moment, but that what I fear is that even when we do get further down the line and decisions can be made and we sort of know where we're headed, we've still got that whole chapter of controversy to come, because there'll be some people that aren't happy, and the world of football is going to be very different, and the actual game of playing football seems a long way off in my eyes.
Yeah, I think it would be, as you say, there's a lot still to happen before we can actually enjoy football again. And it's the questions of what is the non-league and football landscape going to look like. There are, as we've pretty much said since day one and shutdown, there are going to be clubs who are going to find this a really, really difficult period to get through. And I mean, possibly this is probably even going to last longer than we first thought back then. I mean, I think we've all become, we've consumed as much as we can and learned a lot about something that we didn't ever know or didn't ever expect to be kind of happening. And there's a lot of questions still to be answered, but the sort of the fundamentals are there, and that's kind of how a club's going to get through this. Is there going to be support coming down from the Premier League and the government? And sort of at the moment, that sort of seems possibly that won't. Well, it hasn't happened so far with the Premier League.
There's a particular silence there, and I know that at the very outset, all the leagues were. Got clubs to complete a survey about how they thought that everything was going to be affecting them, income-wise in particular. And I know clubs got raced to get that back, so that was passed on to the FA, passed on to the government. And that was before all the furloughing scheme and everything like that. So maybe some of this information has been taken on board and used. But as far as I'm aware, the clubs haven't heard anything back. And things have changed. As you say, people have learnt a lot more and have probably built up a lot more fear as well about the longer term future of their clubs. And we do need a little bit of guidance, I think, from somewhere higher up. As I mentioned in the opening of the show this week, there are 91 league clubs in the top echelons of football, where they like to call themselves the pro level. But at our level, at non-league level, there's all of that plus 1,000 more and some. And that's an important part of communities, networks, life. It's as much as we're all looking forward to maybe watching some football on the TV, that social social distancing means that some people can play some football. It's not everything about football, that game that can be viewed on the TV.
Yeah, and it's sort of going to be forgotten at this kind of, you know, I sort of worry that people are going to get kind of swept up in that wall-to-wall television of football, Premier League stuff being back and everything. But as you say, you know, where the real sort of, it sort of makes me laugh when you kind of see that at the Premier. I know that Premier League clubs are saying, "Oh, we're going to struggle and this and that, and we've got to pay back this money and for TV things." But then, in the same breath, they're sort of looking at signing players, and I'm sort of don't really sort of have a particular issue with all that sort of thing. But I do if they're sort of not showing as much willing, and they can't just sort of there needs to be kind of a bit of a frank sort of conversation really about it, because they can sort of throw out all these numbers of what comes down, but we know the facts are from step three and down, it's going to need to be a lot more. The solidarity payments at step one and two aren't particularly huge, and that has been brought forward anyway as an advance. But what about all the clubs below, as you say, where it gets ever bigger and bigger and the roots go right into the communities, and that's vital. It's going to be vital, as we've said all along, for getting the people and communities back on their feet and back towards this new normality, whatever that is. But I do really sort of, what happens in the coming weeks when the Premier League restarts, and then what happens sort of through their close season, signing players and all this kind of thing, will really sort of show us. It will be undeniable what way they go of how seriously they take their responsibility, as I see it, a responsibility for football all the way down in this country. There are businesses all over the country that are struggling, and the government are going to have to help out a lot of them. And people have lost jobs and businesses, their own businesses that they've worked hard for, and they just been wiped out in the blink of an eye. But to me, there seems to be money in football. Now, is it that hard that they can't put some of that down and actually do what's right, for possibly for the first time?
Yeah, and interestingly, you mentioned those, you know, people that have lost their businesses. They're the sort of people that would be involved behind the scenes at a football club. They're the people that would be helping out and you know, putting a little bit extra into the kitty, whether that paid for players' wages. But more often than not, it's to buy a new washing machine to clean the kit. It's to buy something for the youth team to train with. It's to help with the electricity. So those sort of people that would normally help out non-league clubs as well with a little bit extra just to keep them going, they can't do that either at the moment. My biggest concern, which is a concern that we've had for years, and we raise it time and time again, and it was brought to a head further again today, recording this on Thursday, when I hear that these games that are going to take place in the Premier League, they're going to be able to use five subs. So they've changed the rules of football for the remainder of the season, despite having played the majority of their season. So the integrity of football is important, that they can finish their season, but they've already played somewhat with the integrity by changing the rules. What we're getting is the game that will be on TV that people will be able to watch is a completely different game from the game that we play and we watch and we enjoy every week at non-league level, and we want to be able to watch again at non-league level, but it's becoming further and further away from that thing at the top echelons.
Yeah, I think it's just showing up even more. It's a completely different game. It's a completely different beast, completely different animal. Even through the non-league pyramid, we've seen that as well, you know, how things are different. I want football back as much as anyone. But it's got to be right. And I sort of feel like maybe there's kind of a general feeling of is this going to kind of start getting everyone itchy and try and rush back and put pressure on to get back sooner and things like that. I don't know. It's an interesting time for football and how it's perceived and how people feel about it. And some people obviously, you know, happy that the Premier League is coming back and others is there sort of a degree of discomfort about how, as you say, it's going about, things are being changed, rules are being changed, just to get games on, and it's all basically because of money.
And interesting that I've been hearing the discussions that lower down the pyramid, the FA are pulling together some meetings later on in the month to discuss to with leagues. I don't know what they're going to discuss. It's likely to be what, when, I guess how and where next season could take shape. So maybe that's a positive we can take from this week, is that there does seem to be some movement from the FA. But I'd certainly like to hear something from the Football Association to say, look, we know non-league's important. We want to help. How can we help?
Yeah, I'm sure you've had the same conversation with the FA and asked if they would like to, could we talk? And at the moment, they don't want to say anything until they've sort of got some firm kind of news, I suppose. I can understand that, but yeah, we're going to have to, it'd be good to know what is kind of being taught about, and even if it's just kind of laid out kind of an idea. I know everything's been changing as we've been going through, but an idea of what next season is going to look like. I'm imagining that it's going to have to be slightly different, if not very different. There's a lot of question marks around FA Cup and things like that, which we obviously know is so important for non-league clubs, the finances that can bring in, even in those sort of, qualifying rounds, preliminary rounds, where, you know, it's kind of always happens in the first week of August, and the club might go out, but they do pocket a little bit of money from it, from the loser prize money, and how important that even that just small amounts of money can, on the face of it, can be. And I think it is positive that we can start looking towards. And I think it certainly does feel a lot more positive over the last few weeks that we're kind of moving back in the right direction. But I just think there's so many unknowns that people can't answer. And it's going to be an interesting meeting. I mean, when are we going to start? Not sure. What if we can start in September? Well, what if we can't? You know, it's difficult to have meetings about things at the moment, really, isn't it? But I think there does need to be some, certainly some open discussions. And I think it would do everyone well if everyone can sort of kind of see what that's all about. Because, you know, there's a chance that football's going to have to be a little bit, you know, innovative how next season looks. And we might have to accept that it's not going to be the, as we necessarily want it to be. But these are, as I say, these are all questions that are going to be spinning around, and there's going to have to be some, you know, difficult decisions to make.
It is a bit like if you've ever tried to put on a party, and the party may be 4 weeks ahead, and you're planning everything, you're trying to, your invites are out, you're not quite sure who's going to turn up, and then that day just keeps, it's almost like Groundhog Day, that day keeps getting pushed further and further back. And you can make as many plans as you want, but until we know what that target date is and what that target will allow us to do, everybody's going to remain in limbo. Now, one thing that did put a bit of a smile on my face was seeing Saturday's government briefing. The Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Jonathan Van Tam, revealed, wearing his Boston United tie, that he's I'm a devout Boston United season ticket holder, and I'm desperate for football to come back, which I've at least taken as a big plus for the non-league game. At least we know that one of the experts is fighting in our corner.
He would be pleased. He would want it back, wouldn't he? Because they're going for the playoffs.
Indeed. And it was nice.
It's got that extra incentive.
It was nice to see that they trended nationally on Twitter.
Interesting if they're mid-table, what he said then.
Are you questioning, is if medical expertise may be brought into question simply because of the promotion spaces?
Not for me. When you see that tie, I think those sort of colours together, you think, oh, Boston United straight away for some reason. And then, yeah, if there's one club who should be well informed about it all, it's probably Boston. And you know, you have to see what the manager Craig Elliott's up to. You know, if he starts signing players and things, and suddenly he might know that the new season's coming back, he could start steal a march on his rivals possibly. But no, yeah, it was great for Boston in a kind of a light moment in what's come in what sort of dark period. And yeah, I think that's one of those briefings have been made for difficult listening sometimes, don't they? So it was nice to have a bit of a light moment in there. And he certainly made some headlines with what he said as well, didn't he?
Indeed. And I think he's been my man to watch really through this crisis. He does seem to be I must have known he was a non-league fan. He seems to be the sort of person that speaks some sense in a practical point of view. So I've been sort of trying to pay some attention to him. As you say, maybe we should keep an eye on Boston United as the barometer as to what's likely to happen next. And although there's been no football to be consumed at the moment, there's plenty of reason to give thought to the non-league game. Both this show and your own paper were announced on the shortlist of this year's for Football Content Awards. And of course, people can get involved in your own virtual National Game Awards voting as well. So tell us about that, Matt.
Yeah, as you said, we've been nominated alongside yourself for the Football Content Awards. So we'd be very grateful for any votes there. But we last week we launched our own National Game Awards. We kind of, it was funny actually, because the week before, the week that kind of there were some like some games were played, weren't they? Some weren't. I don't know, and some called themselves off, and a lot of Step 5 and 6 did. We were actually going to launch our National Game Awards that week, and we sort of said, "Oh, maybe we should hold off a little bit and don't tell Chelsea that's a definite yes just yet for booking the room in May." So we didn't actually announce, but we kind of were kind of thinking, well, you know, I know sort of. There's been a lot of controversy around the null and void and things like that, and records being expunged and all this sort of thing. But we sort of felt like we really wanted to recognise the season. So we're doing a virtual National Game Awards. As everything's virtual these days, you can't get away from it now. So we're doing it slightly differently. So it's a slightly stripped back version of our annual National Game Awards, where we obviously have run the sort of the nomination and the nominations and voting period for a much longer time. This is kind of stripped back, slightly different awards. We're doing something slightly different this year. So we've still got some of the usual awards like Manager of the Year and Goal of the Year, Community Club, but we've kind of gone for individual awards at each step this year, which is something we don't normally do, just to kind of try and recognise as many people in a. It's a straight online vote, so you can go on there. You can nominate your player of the year at each level and in step three in each division as well. So hopefully something to kind of recognise the season. Still a lot of good things happen. There's still a lot of fantastic performances and great goals and all that kind of thing, and great cut runs. We've got Cut Run of the Year as well, and we really appreciate all our sponsors helping out with that and kind of getting it on. And it will be it'll be interesting to see the votes. We opened voting on last Sunday. It runs all the way through the rest of this week till next Thursday, and then we'll announce the winners in the paper on, I think it's June the 21st, the Sunday after, once they've all been collated. It's all online voting, and there's a form that you can sort of go in and type in your, you don't have to vote in every category, but you can type in your who you think deserves a gong this year. But we unfortunately, Tim, there'll be no invite for you to Stamford Bridge. We won't be spending the evening in the pub like we normally do, talking all things non-league, because it'll all be from virtually over the interweb this year.
Well, I hope via the interweb there'll still be some virtual networking, I think they like to call it, into the early hours.
Well, yeah, that'd be nice. If I can just sort of work out how to use this Zoom, then we'll be well away. Everyone's using Zoom. It's been good for Zoom, the pandemic, isn't it?
It's been very good for Zoom, and anybody. Without broadband or a mobile with a 3G or 4G data as probably, well, they wouldn't be listening to this anyway. So, but they're probably stuck at home wondering what's going on in the world.
Okay, where is everybody? really sort of pleased to sort of be doing the awards, because it's kind of, like I said, one of those things, we wanted to kind of recognise as many people as we could, and nice to be nominated for an award as well. So any votes there are much appreciated in a difficult category.
Yes, it's very. It's nice that Nonley's got its a number of categories and a number of nominations across the other categories as well that aren't specific to Non-League. So it shows the quality and strength and depth of Non-League at the moment. Of course, out there leading the way, your own good paper every week. This weekend, as I say, we'd normally be in conference season. What can we expect to read in this weekend's paper, Matt?
Yeah, we're still busy working away on this. I think it's the 12th paper since lockdown, so it's been a great effort by the team and our contributors. Really appreciate everyone that's kind of been helping us out and reading us still in this time and saying lots of nice things about us. We've got what we've got this week. I need to think now. We've got an interview with Barry Hales. Obviously, still the sort of Peter Pan of non-league. He's still going strong. We've got an interview with the new Absolute manager, as you said earlier. Slightly interested in choice, and the lads have spoken to him and said he comes across really well, so it'd be interesting to read that. And also got sort of paying a bit of a tribute to Justin Edinburgh, so coming up to the year of his very sad passing, and spoken to him, his son Charlie, who's pushing away with the J3 Foundation to try and leave a lasting legacy to Justin Edinburgh's name. So we're paying a bit of a tribute to him as well for that, incredible. It's a year already, and what such a sad and difficult time for his family and everyone at Leighton Orient. So we're also kind of looking back at and some of the good work that the J3 Foundation are doing.
Well, it certainly seems a good reason to get up on a Sunday morning, Matt, as ever. If you can't get out to your local newsagents, pick up a copy. You can, of course, subscribe digitally online to get your copy of the non-league paper. Matt, it's been good talking to you. Take care of yourself, take care of your family, and I will look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thanks, Tim. Speak soon.
That's it for this week then. Thank you to all of our guests. A big thank you to everybody for listening as ever. Please do give us your vote in the Football Content Awards Best in Non-League Podcast category at www.footballcontentawards.com before votes close ahead of, I believe, the 18th of June at midnight. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show and Dave Anderson's at Dave Anderson 78, Caroline Barker at Caroline Barker, myself at Tim Fuel, FUELL. Plus, of course, you can find us throughout the week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, via your smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Take a look there too for the non-league gaffer tapes in archive. Stay alert, stay safe. Thank you and goodbye.
Jabber Production. JIBBA.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.